Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 4th. I'm Ray Graff. You know, we live in stressful times. There's a certain tension in the air, but I want you to put that aside for an hour, and we'll welcome back our resident bird expert, Rich Guthrie, to talk about birds with you. He'll share his birding knowledge. He'll answer your questions. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie. Who could be more relaxing than Rich Guthrie? And we'll talk about birds coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today on the program, and we welcome back our avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. The number to call if you have a question about birds or birding, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The number, though, is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
You're fresh off the road. You did a new show recently, huh?
Oh, yeah, up at the Colony New York Library. That was Monday night. It was a very interesting evening.
What'd you talk about?
We talked about me.
Well, of course.
Well,
but yeah, I'm assuming it was, some birds as well.
It was... The program was actually the changes I've seen since I was just a wee lad, first tromping around in the woods looking at birds, until just the other day, the latest things that are going on out there and how different they are now than they were then.
All right. Without going into all the details, and after all, we are not paying customers, what's the upshot? What's the biggest thing that has changed?
Oh, the real big thing is the numbers of southern bird species that are now backyard birds here in a listening area, be it coastal New York, Long Island, Connecticut, all the way up into the Adirondacks, Lake Champlain, and the border of Quebec.
Yeah, so what's the most notable bird that you would not have expected when you were a kid that is now common around here?
There are so many of them. The list is long. I could list 30 different species that have demonstrated a population distribution shift south to north. A few from west to east, and a couple from north to south. But back to the south to north ones. Right now, in fact, since it's germane, the turkey vulture, that wonderful schooner of the sky, that we harbinger of spring. I mean, the real harbinger of spring in so many ways. They're in there with the red-winged blackbirds and the robin on the lawn. Mm. The turkey vultures overhead. They're here. They're just returning back from New Jersey.
You know, how long have they been keeping records? And now we have eBird now, but how long have we been keeping records about bird populations?
Oh, since the colonization of North America. I mean, people have been taking notes back then. They got the spelling all wrong, but that's okay.
I assume, though, that this sort of population shift is kind of a natural thing. It goes on all the time.
One of the features that I have is demonstrating how we were once covered by two miles of ice.
Right.
And things were a lot different back then. And since that only 12,000 years ago, change has been continuous. And so the question is, okay, so this is part of a natural progression. We've definitely had warming since the ice covered the area till now. Mm-hmm. So the question is, how rapidly is it occurring?
Right.
So here we go. In my short lifetime, as it is, 30-odd species of birds that have shifted from south to north. It's rather remarkable. Pre-colonial, we know that there were certain southern birds that have moved northward, and it's to be expected.
And some from this area are now further north?
Or have disappeared from this area, for sure, for sure. I mean, when this was a tundra, there were different birds here than there are now, no longer here. So, it's a process of change, and we're seeing a change now. And, you know, the next anticipating who will be next, what will be the next new species for New York State to show up. Then it'll probably be, I'm talking about not the vagrant, not the blow-in, not the one that was dropped out of a storm cloud, but the one that has packed up its bags and decided to move into the neighborhood. And there are a number of candidates, and we'll see.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today on the show. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Kate in Galway is first. Kate, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Ray and Rich.
Hello.
Rich, I wanted to update you, hi, on the black-throated blue warbler that visited me in December.
Yes, yes.
Yes, well, he showed up, or she, December 2nd during that big, the only big snowstorm we had all season, and he was, or his she, I think it was a he, was with us every day until December 26th.
Uh-huh.
So it was chowing down on really good suet and the grapes that I grew last summer. And then I didn't see him again after the 26th. So I'm hoping he made its way, it made its way south. So well, I wanted to give you that update and then ask you about how unusual this is to have them migrating that late. And also, what are the chances they'll stop and see me on the way back north?
The chances of what again?
Stopping in and seeing Kate on the way back.
Oh, returning home. The chances are.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Usually the prognosis for these lingering birds is not good. I mean, they're not meant to be here in the winter.
Right.
They're insect eaters for the most part, and they will resort to fruit and or other sources, such as a suet that you might have put out there, and the mealworms and the like. But you might have been able to give him or her. Was it? Did it have the black throat and the blue back, or was it the gray?
It was a little muted. It was hard for me to distinguish. It was actually the gals at Wild Birds Unlimited that helped me identify him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really not sure if it was male or female.
Okay, I'm going to presume it was a male because but it doesn't matter. The ones that stick around this late have to get out of town, as you say, by December 26th. That's very, very late, and he has that bird has to make it all the way at least to Georgia or Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be going all the way to South America with the rest of that population, but. If it were to make it through down to there, the chances of it coming back are good. They are very faithful to their hometown. So there's a good chance that had it made it through the winter, it'll be back in town.
Oh, good.
Well, it's interesting because I had never seen it before. So if it was nesting nearby, I am a bird watcher in my environ. I had never seen it before, so I thought it was making its way from the Adirondacks.
It could very well be. The black-throated blue warbler in the Northeast nests primarily north of us and in the higher elevations. Mm-hmm. And Galway, New York is not out of consideration for a nesting pair of black-throated blue warblers to set up housekeeping.
Hmm.
So it's entirely possible.
I'll watch for it and I'll let you know.
Okay.
Thanks, Kate. We appreciate the call. The number here is 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. You know, I was thinking about numbers and that's why I lost the phone number for a minute. How many miles let me put it a different way. How long would it take a black-throated blue warbler to get from Kate's backyard to, say, Georgia? Have they ever timed the travel time?
We have done so indirectly with the small birds. The large birds, it's quite easy. They put satellite trackers on their back and send them out. The smaller birds, they use geo-trackers. It's sort of like a light-catching device that they have to recapture the bird to read, to download the data.
Yeah.
And what it does is it catches the time of sunset or sunrise or noonday and the latitude, longitude where the bird happens to be that particular time. And it's a fascinating research, but nonetheless. The little guys, let me see, they probably make about, it's hard to say, a lot of conditions relate to weather.
Right.
And food availability, mm-hmm. comfort zone. So I would say they probably make about 500 miles per hop.
Rough guess. In one day?
Overnight.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, they go from here to, let's say, Virginia.
In one day.
Well, all right, maybe 2 days.
That's okay.
It's
a lot of miles.
But it's difficult to track that way. I know, you know, through tagging and capturing the information, it's, but in the, let me say this, that in the springtime, they're a lot more hurried than they are in the autumn.
Why is that?
In the fall, there's no hurry. They just, you know, have to get out before snow starts.
Right.
In the springtime, they want to get home right away because they need to set up their territory and get down to the business of the next generation. And so they're in a real hurry. The hormones are really pushing them through the weather, through the day, through the night to get home.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds on Vox Pop, and Joan is in Schenectady. Hi, Joan.
Hello. How are you, gentlemen?
Good.
We good.
That is good to hear. I wanted to talk with Mr. Guthrie about an incredible sighting I had right here in Schenectady.
Oh, go ahead. I love it.
Yeah, and they're right in the Woodlawn area, and I think it makes a perfect corridor between the Pine Bush Preserve and Central Park and some of the other open spaces we have, even down to Vale Cemetery near us. The other day, half a week ago maybe, I saw two bald eagles circling in the air right above where I live, not far from State Street, not far from the arterial. And then even more exciting, about 2 days later, very low to the ground, just barely over our garage, a bald eagle was being chased by one of our hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, is there a nesting pair likely of eagles trying to move into the area?
Well, here's the story. Eagles right now are going through several different parts of their life cycle. Some of them are, as you mentioned, nesting. They're settled down. They're hunkered down. They've got their territory staked out, and they've moved in, and they may actually be incubating eggs as we speak. Other eagles still have a ways to go. They're the ones from further north where it's just too doggone cold yet. So they're going to linger a little while, and then soon will migrate north and out of town. Then there's the young ones who are in no hurry to go anywhere. So they'll, you know, just kind of move back and forth to the reservoir, to the river, and eventually wander north or go where they feel like they ought to be at the moment. So the likelihood is that those two eagles that you saw, well, I can't say. They might have been a local resident pair. Or they might be two eagles, not necessarily connected to one another, migrating through. And one thing about eagles is that they are conspicuous. When they're in the air, they are there. They're very much there.
Yeah.
And as far as the hawk is concerned, well, again, they're doing the same thing. Some of the red-tailed hawks are setting up territories and not nesting yet, but they are claiming their spot. And if they're doing that, they're not going to welcome any eagles nearby.
Hmm. So it's common for them to chase after an eagle?
Oh, yeah. They'll try to make it uncomfortable for the eagle to stick around. And then there are other ones that are here from Canada waiting for the right time to go back home. So it's actually a time of flux right now. Things are happening, but different things.
Yeah, and I'm watching it right out my back window.
Oh, well, there you go.
Good for you. Joan, thanks for the call. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Birds today. Rich Guthrie is here. Always a good day when Rich is here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, and this is the exciting portion of the show. We sit down, we get some canned goods that we've hoarded just in case, and we wait for the list to end.
Hey, it's going on as we speak. It's happening.
All right. What do you got?
Let me start out by getting introducing once again, and we had Julie Hart on here before, talking about the New York State Breeding Bird Atlas Project.
Right.
If you're not from New York, come on over, join in. The Atlas Project is just taking track of who's out there nesting and gathering the evidence that affirms this and stores it with the Cornell University, the New York State Ornithological Association, and Audubon Society. So it all gets into one big publication that we know the changes that have occurred. And they are important to know. That's the New York Atlas Project, ebird.org/atlas-new-york.
Can you be a complete novice and do this?
You can. You know, the robin in the yard takes on a whole new meaning, that establishing the presence of that robin as a nesting bird species in New York, and then the rare bird as well. Mm. You know, so all levels of participation, all are welcome. Get in there, sign up. Then there are things that are coming through. We talked about the turkey vultures coming through in the spring.
And
stand by, because the next part of the group is coming in. The killdeer, the phoebes, the woodcock, the snow geese, and the very first warblers, perhaps.
Oh.
Not the black-throated blue, but perhaps the yellow-rump warbler, the pine warbler.
I'm sorry, the yellow-rump warbler?
Yellow-rump butterbuck.
I've not heard of this one.
Yes.
Now you're making bird names up, aren't you, Rich?
Well, lovely names. Anyway, so they're about ready to come back, and it's always a welcome sign of spring. With that, various bird organizations in the area are preparing to get out there and look for them. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be going down to Vosburgh Swamp down in the Coxsackie, New York area.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll be on the 21st of March, spring. And then, again, they're going to be doing a hike on the 28th of March at the Hudson Bike Hike Trail at Lyons Park. And that's hmbc.net for the specifics on that. The Mearns Bird Club down the river will be going to Rye Playland and Greenwich, Connecticut area on March 7th. That's coming up right shortly.
Mm-hmm.
Mearns Bird Club. And on the 14th, they'll visit the Black Dirt area of Orange County. Always a good spot for rare birds.
Mm-hmm.
The Hudson River Audubon Society on the 28th of March will be going to Jones Beach down on the Long Island coast in search of early spring arrivals. And the Hoffman Bird Club over in Pittsfield on Monday, this is down the road in the future, this is Monday, April 6th, at their monthly meeting, they'll have Jeremy Kirchman, our friend from the New York State Museum, will be the program presenter, the Evergreen Archipelago, the ecology and evolution of birds of the edge of the boreal forest. Now, we just talked about that a minute ago.
Yeah.
The boreal forest receding northward, and Jeremy will be talking about the islands remnant in our mountaintops and the like, among other things.
Right.
And then the Waterman Bird Club down in Dutchess County on the 11th of March will be going to Stony Kill Farm at 9 in the morning. And on Wednesday the 18th, the Vanderbilt Mansion, watermanbirdclub.org.
All right.
And one more, that is the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society. We'll be talking about the joys of atlasing.
Ah.
Get together and get out there, learn about atlasing. And that will be at the United Methodist Church in Oneonta on March 20th. That's DOAS, Delaware Otsego Audubon Society.us for information on that. And then just one other thing I just want to mention, and that is the last time I was on, I made a mistake. My good friend Frank made no bones about pointing it out to me.
Oh, no.
And that is with regard to the ostrich, the rhea, and the emu. So I forget which one of the three that I mixed up, but nonetheless, it's the ostrich that's found in Africa, the emu in Australia, and the rhea in South America. And add to that, might as well, the kiwis of New Zealand and the cassowaries of Australia and the Pacific Islands, and the extinct Apiornis out of Madagascar, the elephant bird.
Ah, the elephant bird.
Yes, right. And the moa is also of New Zealand. So that is that whole classification of birds that I just wanted to bring up to date because I misstated it the last time around.
Well, we've cleared that up now. Thank you, Frank, for pointing that out.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
Now, maybe,
never miss an opportunity.
Maybe we can get to the bottom of what sort of birds Heckel and Jekyll are. Remember that
controversy?
I
do. Yeah, that was a good learning moment. Yeah, I love it.
Let's not revisit that. This email came in from another Rich, not you, Rich. Rich. This is another person named Rich.
Can't be too rich.
Rich writes, I have heard incredible numbers bandied about by birders on the numbers of birds killed by cats. Numbers I find hard to believe. Something like a billion in a year, I've heard. Can you tell me where this number comes from, where I can see the methodology, see what assumptions they are making? They certainly didn't count them. That's from Rich, and that's his first question.
Okay, well, of course, it's not practical, it's not possible to count all of them. But we do know that there is a significant toll taken by roaming cats, backyard cats, house cats, feral cats, alley cats, all the bunch. And you could go to the American Birding Association, ABA, to learn more about that. You can find out about the statistical methods that they use to achieve that number, and also methods to prevent that sort of carnage.
All right. And the second question from Rich, do any birds eat bees and hornets?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we have a bird we call the bee bird. And in North America, the eastern kingbird is known as a bee bird. They are particularly fond of catching bees. And also in Africa, the follow me bird is a bird that will track down beehives. And the folks of Africa have learned to follow the follow me bird
for the honey,
because it will lead them to the honey.
Oh, interesting.
What a nice relationship. And then the people will open up the honeycombs, and the birds will help themselves to the bees and the larvae, and the folks will help themselves to the honey. What a deal.
And then the second part of that question is, could a bird outfly a swarm of angry hornets? Seems like it would be easy pickings to sit outside the hornet's nest or beehive and pick them off as they come and go.
Well, I've seen that happen. And the bird will perch itself not far from the nest, from the hornet's nest or the beehive, and sit there and just wait and pick one out of the air every now and then. Just swoop down and grab one.
All right, this question from Nick, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Nick writes, seeking advice, as we have an invasion of sparrows on our feeder seemingly pushing out the usual indigenous species. What can we do? And that's from Nick.
Well, you can change the feeder style or the type of food.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, because once those sparrows, and I presume these are house sparrows, the non-native, the invasive house sparrow that shows up in the yard. I never used to have them, and all of a sudden I have 20 or so at my yard. And I have, you know, they're a quarrelsome little bunch of little birds that...
You don't like them?
I'm not fond of them, because they displace some of the good guys, you know, the so-called good guys.
Right.
And over in Europe, of course, they're very fond of them because they're a native backyard bird species over there. But here, they're sort of like an introduced, unwelcome intruder.
Well, you're an expert. What do?
I feed them.
Oh,
I mean, there's not much you can do about them, in my
live.
Opinion. Yeah, live and let live. I mean, you know, and the good thing about them is that their very presence will attract other birds in, surprisingly enough, because birds are drawn to what looks like a reliable, safe
where
food source.
Where the action is, sort of.
Yes, right.
Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, our guest, Sharon in Valencia. Sharon, you're on.
Hey. Hi, I love this program, and
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you is that about a week and a half ago, I had bands of robins here. They were on the flowering bushes, that the crabapple and
mm-hmm.
all.
Yes.
Trying to get some stuff. Today, this morning, there were two hen turkeys walking through the yard. I'm in a wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 3 days, there have been this, I had never seen anything like these waves, a black wave of screaming and yelling, crackles.
Yeah.
They're all over.
And that's
and
how
they would swoop down and walk along the lawn and then go around in the trees and yell and scream and then come back again. They spent several hours. But we also saw them when we were in Pittsfield yesterday, and this morning I was driving into the town of Valencia and saw a whole band, a wave of them.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not even a band, it's like multiples in a cornfield. I wondered what they're eating, and I just got a kick out of listening and seeing them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting,
isn't
it?
And the dog was frightened by them.
Well, tell the dog not to worry. There's nothing to worry about
right.
there.
All right.
But that's how they operate. They move. They move in these dark clouds and swarm in like a wave.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they're fascinating, interesting to watch, but not to worry. They move on quickly. They just, you know.
I'm not worried. I wondered what they were eating and where they go.
Well, for the most part, they're eating leftover grain, spilled grain in the cornfield
they
and
were
grubs.
In the cornfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This time of year, they're a beneficial bird. They're, you know, cleaning
the
area
crops,
of the grubs and the like.
Yeah, they were doing that.
Yep. There you go. Well, Sharon, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
A lot of fun.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
800-348-2551, the number. We go to Dwayne in Hillsdale. Dwayne, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Rich, I have a question about the hunting range, typical hunting range of red-tailed hawks, particularly on a daily range. And the reason I'm asking you this is back in January, late January, I crossed paths with a white hawk in Copaic, New York, by the Black Grocery Road parking lot. And I went back February 3rd, took a bunch of pictures, sent two sets of pictures, two pictures each to the three main administrators of the Hoffman Bird Club, of which I am also a member, for their opinion. Because I thought, I wasn't sure, because I'd heard about white morphs, I've heard about white phase, and it, I was wondering if maybe this might be a partial albino. And the answers came back leucistic.
Yes.
What
and,
does that mean?
I've been tracking this bird almost on a daily basis, trying to see where it goes, because it isn't always there. Most people I've encountered, particularly people who walk their dogs, have been seeing this bird for quite some time. One birder who I met there recently has seen this bird there for over 2 years, and I met three day laborers at a farm recently who have seen the bird in the area for over three. So it's established here, but it's not always here.
Well, and here's the thing about that. The red-tailed hawk, first of all, the leucistic red-tailed hawk, which means white, it's a color pigment what can you say, disorder in the bird. They are around. It's an interesting aspect of red-tailed hawk populations. And the one that you speak of, I think we know about that one, but they are easy to pick out when you can see them. Sometimes they get mistaken for a snowy owl or even a gerfalcon. But and back to your point, your question, and that is their range. Well, it depends on the food source, the food supply. They will range through a large open field, wood's edge, and I will say that probably in the range of probably a quarter mile square, just in rough numbers. Again, it depends on the food supply and also adjacent competition. Now, they can live for quite a long time. There was one of these leucistic red-tailed hawks down in Millbrook, New York, that was a female sitting on a nest, and the nest was locatable every year. And they were able to determine this bird was coming back and using the same nest for 12, 15 years.
Wow.
There was another one over in Stonykill in Ulster County, New York, that was there a good 15, 20 years. So they can live a long time. They are quite healthy. They get along fine. They successfully pair up with a normal color phase red-tailed hawk and raise young and return each year. It's a very fascinating subject in terms of the red-tailed hawk population. We have a picture of it here for lives
for
up
benefit.
To its name.
Yeah.
The normal color phase has a brick red tail as an adult bird.
And how many of these mutations do we see around?
Not many.
No?
Not many. But what's interesting is that once you see them, you know it's it.
Yeah.
And but
Rick, excuse me. By the way, I did try to put this up on eBird.
Mm-hmm.
After I didn't hear anybody else having even reported this, so that's up there maybe. I also have a picture of it that I could send you if you would like it.
Sure. Well, that'd be fine.
What's your email address, Rich?
The email address is my name, Richard P. P as in Peter, Richard P. Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E. So it's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
All right.
And your emails are most welcome.
Dwayne, thank you for the call. Now, you are one of the reviewers for eBird.
I am.
What is the weirdest thing you've seen there lately?
It's hard to say because, you know, 99% of the reports we get are routine.
Right.
Very important.
Right.
They're all welcome. And every now and then there will be something come in, but.
Do you remember this one coming in?
No. And it wouldn't show up because it would go in the comment section of Red Tail Hawk submission. And Red Tail Hawk is not something that will show up in my review queue.
Oh, I see.
Because it's an expected bird species, and as long as it's not an outlandish number of Red Tail Hawks or a difficult-to-identify subspecies of Red Tail Hawk, I would not necessarily see it.
So the software pretty much picks and chooses and says, this is an odd one. Send it over to Rich.
Yeah, it flags it. There's a whole system of filters and triggers that. So the black-throated blue warbler on eBird in December would show up.
Okay.
In June, not so.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Joanne in Ticonderoga. Joanne, you're on.
Yeah. We have some black vultures over winter here in Ticonderoga hanging around the village. And they've apparently been staying warm by roosting on chimneys.
Yeah, I love them, don't you?
They've been roosting on the chimney of my mother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And they also hang out in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never seen them here before. And actually, the turkey vultures didn't show up here until, you know, probably 10 or 15 years ago. So but the turkey vultures went south, but the black ones didn't. They're still here.
You're absolutely right. And that's one of the fascinating aspects of this whole business of southern birds coming north. The resident ones, the ones that we hear before, the turkey vulture in this case and the black vulture. The turkey vulture got here, as you point out, to the Ticonderoga in New York area and elsewhere, probably about 15, 20 years ago. The black vulture only 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
And what's interesting is the turkey vulture migrates out of the area for the winter, and the black vulture not so much.
Huh.
And they do, you know, they're pretty clever. They do hang out by chimneys, gathering up the heat coming through the chimney. It's one of the characteristics of these guys. That and the fact that they do overwinter. And sometimes we'll get roosts of black vultures, 20 or 30 of them, in one location throughout the winter months, whereas the turkey vultures are long gone and are one of the first returning bird species in the spring.
Joanne, thank you for the call. I got to tell you, I love the black vultures. I think they're fascinating birds. They're kind of tough cookies.
Yeah, they are. They're tough guys, and more so than the turkey vulture. They're a little more assertive than the turkey vulture. Turkey vulture is more like a chicken. You know, they'll just kind of like scoot out of the way if you come near them. The black vulture will stand there and stare you down.
Stand their ground. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. More birds on the way. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number's 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. Hang on there. Judy in Saratoga, you'll be next. This email came in from Natalie in Burnt Hills. And Natalie says, I had a pair of Baltimore Orioles last year at my feeder full of hulled sunflower seeds. First in 20 years. What is the chance that they will return? If so, what should I put out? Oranges?
Yeah. And yes, to both. There's a good chance that they'll come back. Birds have this sight fidelity, a strong sense of returning to where it worked before. So if they made it through the winter, their migration to Florida or Texas or Mexico, then there's a good chance they will be the ones returning.
Nice.
So, and that they found your yard. Sunflower seeds, very unusual for an oriole. Not their normal fare. But the oranges, well, that depends. They have to know an orange is a good thing to go after. They will have to have learned that someplace. They don't learn that quite instinctively on their own.
Well, you have to have the first one, right?
Yeah, somebody had to be first.
Yeah.
And if another one sees it, then they will learn from that, and there will be the next orange eater.
Okay.
But if they don't come across a feeder in Mexico or Texas or Florida that has oranges out, they're not going to know an orange is a good deal.
Okay.
They may experiment at some point or maybe not.
All right. This one came in from Maryland. For about 17 years, we've had two geese come and nest on island in our pond. They stay until a few days after their goslings hatch, then they disappear. We wonder if they're the same geese year after year or perhaps their offspring.
More than likely the same pair. Geese, it's not as though there's fidelity in pair bonding in the birds. It's opportunistic. You know who happens to be there at the moment?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way it is.
So loose morals is what you're saying?
Well, yeah. That's not a judgment call,
all
but
right.
That's the way it is. All right. But geese travel usually in groups, usually stick together, and usually are the same two that will return to the same area, much like the oriole, and they will come back more or less together.
Okay.
And that being the case, it is him and her, Mr. and Mrs.
This one comes in from Suzanne. I've started hearing a familiar-sounding bird in the early mornings. It sounds like Pikachu, Pikachu, Pikachu. Any ideas?
Yeah. If you speed that up a little bit, Ray, we'll get... Yeah, you got it. That's it. Well, not quite so much.
All right.
Put down that coffee.
All right.
This is the Carolina Wren.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Who has that, and it translated, as Roger Tory Peterson would have said, tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle.
Ah, okay.
Tea kettle, tea kettle. And they're lovely sounds. I mean, this is another southerner, and what's nice about these southern birds is that they start the season sooner. You know, it's earlier spring down south, and
right.
They carry that calendar with them. And so they're out there singing spring songs while we're still hunkered down for winter.
Okay.
A welcome sound.
This one's from Marjorie in Saugerties. I have a pair of black vultures that come to my yard every day. They also have come since they were very young. Get in touch with me if you want to see videos. And that's from Marjorie.
Well, I always welcome videos of black vultures coming to the same yard every year. Now, send me a contact, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
All right, we will forward Marjorie's email to you and put you in touch.
Bingo.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Judy in Saratoga. Judy, you're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in a car, so I was almost running out of time. I saw, I heard in front of my house in Saratoga a bird sound, and it was so nice to hear a bird sound, a bird song. And it was, I'd never heard it before, and it went like, ew, 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 ew. It sounded like ew. And I looked up, and it was kind of gray in the tree, light-colored bird. Does it ring a bell?
How big?
Not that big.
Not that big. How not?
How not?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
Bigger than a robin? Smaller than a crow? Bigger than a sparrow?
Big? No, smaller than a robin.
Smaller than a robin. Okay. I'm going to suggest
head. You know what's in a big head?
Right.
Delicate little what?
Delicate little head.
Oh, delightful.
Yes.
I'm going to suggest a tufted titmouse.
And
they are another southern bird, one that when I was a kid were not found around here, are now found around here. Let's see if I get the whistle working here.
Here we go.
They have that kind of like a two-tone whistle that they'll repeat periodically.
Is that right, Judy?
It could be. It was so nice and clear.
Yeah, my whistle was not that clear, and I apologize for that.
That's okay. It could very well. Yes, that's it.
Oh, gosh darn it.
That's it. I got it. I'm hearing you on my phone.
I love you, Judy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Another satisfied customer. 800-348-2551. Tom and Latham. Tom, you're on.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I had a question regarding the your opinion on the ethics and morality of utilizing audio playback as a tool for locating and observing different species of owls.
Good for you, Tom. A very good question. And I'm with you on that.
What do you mean?
Well, here's the thing. Bird sounds are very important to the birds. It's either a territorial defense or a mate attraction effort. And both of those are serious business.
Right.
What you don't want to do is throw them off their game. And so when a person comes up with an audio recording of a bird sound and cranks up the volume, turns it on, and plays it out there, that poor little guy, mostly a guy, may be overwhelmed by that. And in a normal response in a situation like that is fight or flight. And you may very well cause an individual to give up their territory and yield to this huge monster elephant gorilla.
They'll just go to another territory, though, right?
Yeah, but you don't want that to happen because it'll have to bust its way into somebody else's territory and fight for the right for that ground.
All right, with all due respect, Rich, you make a variety of bird sounds, and some of them are very good.
Well,
what's the difference?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. The bottom line is always, first of all, moderation is the key, and always let the little guy win. If you can, playing a sound may or may not have an effect on an individual bird. If you play it and let him win, it'll just make a bigger impression on his sweetheart who's watching.
Ah.
And on the other hand, off-season, it doesn't matter. If you're playing a bird territorial sound in August or September, they don't care. They may or may not respond. They may fly in to see who this is and, just assert their presence and then move on. But this time of year, you really want to use discretion and really not drive a bird off its territory through playback sounds.
Great call, Tom. Thanks a lot. And our number is 800-348-2551. Natasha in Great Barrington, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My mom gave my youngest daughter an adorable little birdhouse that she purchased at a farmer's market last year. And we're trying to figure out where to hang it and what kind of bird it's for. She said that the person who built it said it's for chickadees.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's made of mushroom wood. And just a few criteria. Our yard is very sunny, and we have a dog. So I want to make sure that we hang this where we can attract some little birds.
Okay. Well, it will probably work. Maybe not so much for the chickadee, but I'm going to bet that if you put it in the yard, you'll have a good chance of getting a house wren to move in.
Mm.
House wren is a delightful little...
Is that a good thing?
Say it again?
It's a delightful bird. I was just going to say, is that a good thing?
Oh, it's a very good thing. The house wren...
Oh, great.
In your yard is a delightful thing. They have the guy sings and sings and sings all day long.
Yeah.
And he's a very careful provider for his mate. So I would suggest that a house wren might be your next neighbor, and to put the nest box in a safe place, a little elevation so that it's not in reach of the dog's paw. And someplace over a little distant from the house. But aside from that, all you need is
Is it okay if it's in the sun?
Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
They're used to being in, if it can get some occasional shade, that's great. But house wrens are very versatile. They'll nest in almost any situation. Even if they don't nest, they'll build a dummy nest and sing there as though they were playing house in the King of the Hill.
All right, Natasha, thanks for the call. And now we zip over to, looks like, North Adams. And Linda, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Just real quick, my daughter and son-in-law this Monday evening heard a distress call coming from the woods in their backyard, and they said it sounded like a kitten. They found an owl on its back being held by its foot by a raven. And they have video of it. I was in shock when I saw it this morning. They were able to separate the two, and the owl did fly away, as did the raven. But would the raven have killed the owl?
Hmm. That's a good question.
This is like a Nostradamus quatrain.
Yeah. And here's the hard facts. I don't know. Ravens and owls, hawks, crows, jays, ravens, all related, do not get along with birds of prey. And the raven may have a nest nearby, and what it's doing is, to the best of its ability, protecting its babies or the potential babies or just, you know, living through this whole hate relationship they have with birds of prey. And an owl is always fair game for one of these things. Now, most of the time, the bird, the crow, or the jay is too small to do any real damage. But a raven is, you know, is a big bully. He's a big character.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he outweighed the, it was a small little owl, a little square small owl. And he stayed right on his back for a while. But then, you know, immediately after they got them separated, he was able to, you know, fly off. But.
Well, it's, the owl will have to do a better job in the future of just laying low during the daytime. Really.
I mean, yes, that's, he will.
They, you know, it's hit or miss. They really do not want to be found by a crow, a jay, or especially in this case, a raven. If you have the address, send me a snapshot of one of the pictures. So I'd be curious to know what
I
sort
sure
of
will.
Owl it was.
Okay, I sure will.
It's
okay.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
Right.
All right, Linda, thank you very much for the call. It gets back to the last question about the house rent.
Mm-hmm.
And you say they're making noise all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that attract predators? Isn't that telling the predator, okay, well, here's one over here?
No, not likely. I don't see where that's that is a outcome. No, no. A healthy singing bird is in good enough shape to evade a predator.
Okay.
Not so much for the babies, for example. If you have babies begging in the nest, that will draw the attention of a roaming house cat, and it'll probably be the end of that nestling.
Okay, over to Joan in Albany. Joan, you're on.
Oh, hi. What an interesting show. I live in Altamont, sort of on a rural road, and I always have the bluebirds come. And, well, they don't always pick a nest. Sometimes the tree swallows, they'll fight for who's going to get that box. However, in this last week, it's been so warm. They look like they're trying to nest because I'm seeing them morning, noon, afternoon. And I don't think there's anything I can do, right? Like, will they build a nest early because it's warm?
No, not necessarily. What they may do is stake out the territory and hope to defend it against other bluebirds. And next in town will be the tree swallows, which are early returning migrant bird species. And as you point out, they do like to use the same nest boxes as a bluebird does.
Ah.
And so the trick there is to put a duplicate box right nearby, one for each. You know, one for the swallow, one
How
for the
How close do you think, Rich? How close should the boxes be if I use two?
I've seen them back-to-back on the same post.
Oh, like condos.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
All right. Front yard, backyard.
Okay.
And, yeah. But, you know, a foot or two apart or even 10, 15 feet apart.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I don't have luck if the tree swallows come first. If they build their nest, they'll defend it. If they haven't built their nest, they're sort of non-aggressive, right? And they just fly away.
Yes, you're right about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great show. Thank you.
Joan,
oh, thank
thanks
you,
a
Joan.
Lot for the call. Quickly over to Valacia and Bob. Hello, Bob and Valacia.
Hello. 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 Mr. Guthrie. I live in Valacia. I've got a rather sad piece of anecdotal data to report here. Appreciate your comment, if you can have any. I've been on my property here for 50 years. I sit on about 2 acres between the villages of Kinderhook and Valacia. My property is all wooded, and I've kept it wooded over the years. I've been feeding birds here for 50 years, and a dramatic thing happened, I would say end of last summer, maybe early fall, I'm guessing maybe September, October, the birds disappeared. I mean, totally. My bird feeder would, my tall cylindrical bird feeder would typically get emptied in a day or two. And as of last fall, the birds totally disappeared. Now, in the last couple of weeks, I would say a few have reappeared, but it's almost still non-existent bird population. The only thing I can put my finger on, and I doubt that this has any effect at all, the back of my property has the new Hudson rail trail in construction, and that has been pretty much completed, Hudson rail trail.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it was under construction, I mean, the activity was very minimal, so I can hardly see it from where I live.
Well, I'm going to suggest that probably had nothing or little to nothing to do with what was going on in your yard. Birds can accept that sort of disturbance going on, as long as, you know, they might be momentarily displaced. The thing is, your call and your observation is very similar to a lot of the different reports we're getting through the course of the winter on the previous shows and observations made by others. And that is, for backyard feeder watchers, this has been a dry year.
And why is that?
Well, it's normal fluctuations in population numbers, and the climate, the weather that we've had through the winter is relatively mild, and the availability.
You mean there's food available?
Available aside from other food, and so,
But Bob's been feeding birds 50 years.
I understand. I'm going to suggest, and Bob, I'll ask you to keep us posted.
Okay.
And if you can, get on eBird, and also contact me, because I'm going to suggest that come April, May. Right on through August, you're going to see somewhat similar, if not the same numbers that you have in the past. That this is just a temporary situation, like others have expressed. So keep up the good work. Keep feeding the birds and let us know. Keep us posted.
Well, Rich, also good work for you, sir. Thank you. The support comes from Theta Dermatology, celebrating 25 years providing dermatological care in the Capital Region. A practice founded by Dr. Theta Patterson. When it comes to skin, this practice is in Theta Dermatology.com. And Gardener Supply at Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 50 years, offering indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, organic fertilizer, and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for joining us. Thank you for listening. I apologize to the many who are on the line. We didn't get to you this time. Call very early next time. Rich will be back very soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Ed Rosen for answering the phones. And thanks to our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson come and join us and talk about astronomy. Right now, stand by for 51%.